This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
92.9 Podcasts, powered by Action 24/7, Tennessee's only local legal sportsbook. Bet now at action247.com. With special guest host J.R. Moore from Ingram Hill.
Hey!
I got the drop.
We got it. Good morning and afternoon, Memphis. Welcome to the Jason and John Show. My name is J.R. Moore, filling in for the boys. I'm like Cam Newton. I was on my couch, and then Brad called, and now I'm back.
I'm so happy you're back, man.
This would have worked out better last week if I could have tied it in with the Cam Newton thing better, but here we are.
It still works because the last time we brought you into the studio to do this gig, there were no sports.
There are sports happening now. What a world.
It's amazing what's happened in 6 months. It really
is. It's amazing. So, yeah, so the fellas are already stuffing their Thanksgiving turkeys, so they got the week off.
And taking those vacation days, and they should do.
As they should do that. They're hardworking, and, you know, they want to give thanks.
So they're
giving thanks by taking the week off. Yeah. Unless I'm here through Wednesday. So much happened over the weekend. Like, it's amazing that it's awesome that sports are happening when I host a sports talk radio show. It makes us like a way easier and better gig.
The gig, I told you that. I said, hey, this gig, way more awesome when there's sports.
Today on today's show, I have no plans to do a fast food French fry contest.
No, that's too bad. We did fast food French fry contest talk and stuff for 6 months during coronavirus.
It's amazing.
I don't know how the guys did it. I really don't.
I don't know. So here we are.
Yeah.
Well, here we are. The Tigers. I'll tell you, the Tigers basketball team, they are both sloppy and awesome. They're like the basketball version of Sloppy Joe's.
Yeah. Delicious, they're playing with their food.
Delicious, but a total mess.
That's kind of them. That is kind of them.
The Titans, they played in a sloppy mess, but they got embarrassed. The Tiger women's soccer team.
Yeah.
They lost to the number one seed Duke at Duke in the NCAA tournament. Shout out to them.
Just by one goal.
1-0. So props to them for
congratulations.
For putting up a fight. The Tiger football team, they once again looked like their brand new no fun brand of football.
Yeah.
And a loss to the old Houston Cougs. And the Grizzlies got their brains beat in by the Minnesota Tenderloins, as my wife calls them.
The tenderloins.
Shit, the tenderloins.
And they weren't supposed to be good tenderloins.
No,
they were supposed to be bad tenderloins.
No, but they took a 40-plus point loss to the tenderloins, so that happened. Dan Mullen got fired. Yeah. Super fun game last night that was, like, actually interesting. Cowboys lost. Alabama, Arkansas was a blast. It was a big weekend.
There was a lot of stuff going on.
But we're going to start today with the urban slang that I had to learn in order to host this show.
See, we're teaching you things.
Brad,
and you're the touring artist.
I know, Brad, let's hit him with cap or no cap.
Cap. It means lion, but built different. Now it's cap.
I'm going to say cap.
For no cap.
I'm going to say that's no cap.
On 92.9's Jason and John Show.
There you go.
There we go. I like it. All right. Brad Carson.
Yes.
Penny Hardaway will be able to play 9 players or less Wednesday night at Barclays Center against Virginia Tech.
Cap or no cap, I say. That is cap. This man, and I love Penny Hardaway. I am a huge Penny Hardaway fan. Penny Hardaway, my favorite coach.
Yeah. Love him.
Maybe my favorite college player.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm old enough. I think you and I are close to the same age. You're not as old as I am, but you have memories of him.
Well, I definitely remember him playing, yes.
Yeah.
He was amazing.
I do think he's still in the learning phase of the coaching part of the program, and that's fine. That's cool because we're awesome, and he's recruited all these great players. But we've been talking about this on the station a lot, that the rotation may be a little too bloated. There are worse problems than that. You know, their defense is great. They play a lot of dudes. I would hope that you could see nine players, the guys he's going to roll with in this game at the Barclays Center on Wednesday against Virginia Tech. I am not hopeful about that, though, because I have a feel. I think Penny, when he sees guys who he's recruited, including his son and Alex Lomax, on that bench, he wants to play them all. And so I say cap.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. He will not play nine players or less. Whether he should or not is not the point. He's not going to. Do you think that, and even with it, the people that he has on his staff,
yeah.
There's no way they agree with this method of using a rotation and amount of players. But do you think this is his method of being a head coach and being a head coach of such of that many good players? This is his method of managing egos. Is that when you have that many guys who can play?
That's a good question.
His son is like not a bad basketball player.
No, and he looks the part too. He's beefed up now.
He's not a bad basketball player, but he probably doesn't belong to play a lot of minutes on this team.
Yeah.
And so it's not like, say, he's like just playing some dude who doesn't belong on the floor.
Yeah.
He does belong on the floor on some teams. Maybe not this one.
Yeah.
But I think this is how he's managing egos. Like, he hasn't figured out a better way to do that yet than to just like, all right, I'm just going to have to get them some moments on the floor.
Yeah.
And then when it comes down to in the second half when I have to do something, then is when I have to tighten it.
I think you're right. I think that he's got good players, and he's got good players who would start for a lot of teams
Absolutely.
That don't start for this team.
Absolutely. And it's like throwing them a bone, almost like a
right.
Well, this is how maybe I can keep you from transferring or keep you around because I may need you next year. Maybe you're not a one and done, and so I may need to keep you for next year. But I can't think of any other reason to do this except that this is his method for managing all the egos. This is just give them a little bit of something.
Yes.
And if they're playing, if they just happen to come in and light it on fire, well, then I'll leave you in.
I think you're right. The danger with doing that, especially when you play a lot of slaw teams and you're in a weaker conference like Memphis, is that becomes the team, right?
Yes, so you don't know your role.
Yeah.
People don't know their role at that point. And so it's very...
Like, if I'm the lead guitarist in Ingram Hill and the lead singer... this is probably a terrible example. Let's just say a band, okay?
Okay, a band.
This is a terrible example.
A band called
Are you
Eager
in a radio
Bill.
Station called 92.9 and you want more? No. let's call it Mother Jones.
Mother Jones.
I always thought Mother Jones would be a great band name because Mother Jones is buried in my hometown.
Yeah,
and I
yeah.
thought, man, Mother Jones would be a great band
name. If you
name.
Were a 1994 grunge band out of Spokane.
Mother Jones, straight out of Spokane. All right, so Mother Jones, and you are the, I'm sorry, but you're the melody third string guitar player who plays the third chord stuff. You are not the lead guitarist.
Sure, the third chord.
Yeah, and you play the whole tour that way, right? I made that up, too. I'm making all sorts of music stuff up to a musician. This is bad. And I played saxophone. Let's say you're third chair saxophone in Mother Jones.
Third chair. What kind of grunge band out of Spokane?
It's a ska punk grunge band. It's a ska punk grunge band. Roll with it. This is a screwed up analogy from the get go. But you are in this band and you don't get to play a lot of the cool stuff.
That's
you're
right.
not at the front of the stage.
That's right.
You're at the back, man. Like, and it's fine. Like, you're lucky to be at the back on this band.
Yeah.
But you play that thing the whole time. And then suddenly, you know, you're like, I should be playing more than this. But so you're seeing a lot of the front stage time. And you're seeing the front stage time more often than not for this particular tour. And it's more front stage time. And then finally, he's like, look, we got real shows to play now.
Right.
So we're going to bring you to the back of the stage.
That's right. We're no longer playing bar mitzvahs.
Kind of screws up stuff.
We now have real shows.
Does that not screw up the mojo?
I would say that screws up the mojo, yes.
Yeah.
I mean, and I feel like in just about anything, knowing your role, self-awareness and knowing your role is a huge part of not just succeeding in teams, but succeeding in life, maybe.
I think that's true.
And so, but in this little bubble, like, it's great that everyone, like, that many players can't have the ability to be good, productive players and can do something.
Right.
But there's only five players can play at a time. And so, and there's only so many minutes in a game.
Right.
And there's only one ball. And so, like, eventually you screw up people's in their own self-awareness if you can't help lead them into where that self-awareness is on in their role in the team, then they start creating their own self-awareness or their self where they think they should be, at which point now you have
and on this team you have pros. Who lock up positions that hold those positions. So let's just start with the top five. two of those dudes are pros.
Yeah.
So they need to start, and they need to play a lot. They probably need to play more minutes than they're already playing.
Yeah.
At least when you play good teams.
Yep.
So that's Jalen and Imani. And then you turn to, you know, Lester's going to have to play. You've got Landers Nolly's going to have to play. DeAndre's going to have to play. And now you have the two-point guards in Earl Timberlake and Alex Lomax. That's where the hardest part for, I think, a lot of fans are, because they don't see Alex Lomax as somebody who's a starting caliber guard on a team that's supposed to be a Sweet 16 team.
That is very true. Yes, that is true.
To put it bluntly,
and they're probably right. Except, like,
Gary has said as much on this station.
Except at some point, if that's the guy you decided you're going to go with, then you just have to go with it and not just roll.
Don't give Tyler Harris a bunch of minutes because what happens? That is a capable player, and he gets in, and he balls out on Tennessee Tech.
He's a capable player that does something that your starting point guard can't do, which is score and shoot. And so he fills this glaring hole that you're like, well, wait a minute.
Hold up.
On your bench. They're built very similarly, so it's not like it's a size
thing. Both slight,
except he can score?
Yes.
So wait, why are we not playing this guy?
Maybe he should start.
That's exactly right.
And then in theory, it might be Earl Timberlake might be the best point guard, who's a non-scoring point guard at this point, given his injuries.
Yep.
He's tough. He can handle the ball a little bit. It creates a problem. And then you got Josh Minot. I mentioned 9 dudes right there.
Yes.
10. It's a real challenge.
I mean, because they're still playing Malco.
Malco is
and Jaden.
And I think that's maybe where the rotation needs to tighten up. Figure out your point guard and then maybe tighten on the forward spot.
It needs to be at 8 or 9, and then you have your guys in break glass in case of emergency. Like, you have 4 guys and with 3 fouls in the first half. Then you go, all right, Jaden, go in.
And
or
maybe,
same with Malco.
And maybe you're telling the players that this week, like, this is the week where we're not screwing around with the lineup so much because we have Virginia. Like, this is a real team.
I don't know if that ever happens.
I don't think it does.
I don't think that ever happens. I think it
organically happens, and you show up to a game and you're not playing.
Maybe
that sucks too.
That does suck. But that's the thing. That's not knowing your role.
Right.
Like if you always have the
Jones example.
Hey, I might be getting in. That whole like stay ready.
No.
I mean
that doesn't work.
I mean yes, that's a fun thing to say to somebody.
Right.
But like. All that really does is create unrealistic expectations.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
It's so you can't just you need to know ahead of time. Like I'm probably
who's
not
my
playing.
8 or 9.
I'm probably if you're a bench if you're the 10th guy, you probably get. I'm probably not playing. If I get in, great. I'm gonna do my best.
Right.
But like I don't need to be sitting here looking at the coach every time he turns around and looks at the bench. Be like, is it me? Is it me? Is it me? You don't need to be doing that. That's not gonna. You don't need and you don't need your team doing that.
No.
You need them to know who and what they are. To be a cohesive unit.
And Jason and John pointed this out to me. They said to me, because I tend to be too rose-colored glasses with this stuff. Like, well, surely if you're recruiting and you're telling these kids you're going to play X amount.
Right.
And Jason and John were like, yo, man, that ain't happening. Like, everybody's getting to play a lot is the way you position that.
That's
and
correct.
Then you figure it out.
That's right.
So you get the players.
Yeah, you tell them you're going to play a lot.
Right.
And then it's kind of like you
figure it out.
You will well when you see it in practice that you're not as good as this
right,
guy.
Right, right.
Then I don't have to tell you, oh, I lied to you, or I didn't tell, it wasn't being the truth. I gave you the shot.
Right.
You didn't prove yourself.
Interesting.
So, you did this for me.
So it is the Virginia Tech game will be the next, and that's going to be the biggest challenge for them at the Barclays Center. That game is Wednesday, and I think we figured this out. This is the beginning of the year NIT, not the end of the year.
Yeah, it's not. They don't call this the preseason NIT,
no,
right?
I guess because it's not
the
preseason.
It's the in-season NIT
at the Barclays Center, and so hopefully we'll beat Tech. We'll go to some more very passionate Memphis news here. We all saw what happened on Saturday. Memphis, they lost to Houston pretty handily, actually. It really wasn't close. I mean, they had their moments there, but it wasn't that close.
Nope.
Memphis football will beat Tulane and become bowl eligible. Cap or no cap, Justin? JR.
Number one, you can call me Justin or JR. Either work.
Okay.
I mean, the J and JR is short for Justin.
We only have J's on this show.
It's fine. It's all good. I just want to make it as confusing as possible.
That's good. You can call me whatever you want. Just don't call me Mother Jones.
Just don't call me Mother Jones. This is no cap. They're gonna win. They're winning. I mean, I don't think they're very good. I think it's depressing that they're not very good. But I don't think they're lose to Tulane. Not very good. Tulane is real bad.
They're real bad.
Real bad.
I mean, they've had moments where they play well against like Oklahoma at the beginning of the year. They played pretty well. They've been close. They've only won 2 games though. You're right. They are bad.
That was the highlight was playing Oklahoma close. was the highlight of their season.
Cincinnati, yeah. I mean, Cincinnati 31-12. SMU, they lost handily. Houston handled them by 3 touchdowns. East Carolina, yeah. I mean, you got to go beat this team.
When Memphis,
they played decent against Ole Miss before they really zapped them in the second half.
Sure.
You're right.
I think they win on Saturday and become bowl eligible. But this is like one of those weird things. Like, when the momentum and the trajectory is like, looks up, it's not on the incline. It kind of feels like it's going the other way.
Yeah.
And you squeak into bowl eligibility.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that technically you have to go because you can say we've been to a bowl 8 straight years or whatever it is. But, like, is it really something to celebrate when you go – when you've been a good football team with a winning record for this many years in a row, like, do you feel celebratory when you go 6-6 and barely make it to a bowl?
I don't think you feel good about it.
You go because you kind of have to, but like you don't feel great about it, right?
Yeah, I'm looking at some of the bowl predictors. This is where they're expected to go, what bowl they'll be in.
Sure, sure.
So they're probably going to beat Tulane this weekend. I mean, Tulane lost to a crappy South Florida, beat a crappy South Florida team this past weekend, but that's one of their two wins.
Yep.
December 24th. It looks like they could be in Hawaii. If you want to go to Hawaii with the Memphis Tigers, it could be Wyoming is one of the CBS predicted games.
Wyoming.
With them taking one of the slots there in Hawaii.
I thought Hawaii always played in the Hawaii
Bowl. Well, it's Mountain West and Conference USA, but sometimes, like here at the Liberty Bowl, they flip in. They'll take a team from the American because there's not all the teams in the Mountain West suck.
Right.
You know, or whatever.
It.
So the Or maybe you go to New Orleans. But you're right about your initial point, and that is I haven't been excited about Memphis. I was sad that they beat Mississippi State.
I'm sure you were.
I was sad because I'm a Mississippi State fan. But I went to go see them play at Tulsa, and they looked terrible. And I root for Memphis, and I think that it's a tough spot for Ryan Silverfield because now it's on you.
That's correct.
And so it's on not only just recruiting, but you have to figure out who your coaching staff is going to be going forward because you're trying to figure out what is the leadership role for these dudes who are going to get my special teams fixed, who are going to get my defense to look a lot better because we've been sloppy on defense.
Yeah.
And then what type of an offense am I going to run? I've got a quarterback, right? So Seth Hennigan's
Who's
your quarterback.
Good.
He's really good.
Good.
Like you, that's actually the one cool thing if you're Memphis is you have a quarterback because what do we learn about Justin Fuente and Virginia Tech? Like, if you don't have a quarterback, you don't have a football, like, you're in a bad spot.
Yep.
So, like, he's got some really good things to work with. It's just, like, you probably have about a year to get it right. So, you're, you know, getting back to 8 wins.
I certainly hope so.
Yeah.
I mean, it is on him. And that's one of those things he's got. When you have a really good quarterback, you can't blame this on, it's the freshman quarterback, he's a backup. He's not the problem.
He's not the problem at all.
He has shown he's got the goods. And
you got weapons for him.
And the receivers are good.
You got real weapons for him.
And yet they don't feel explosive. They don't feel.
Well, and Jeff has pointed this out on his show. He feels like they're trying to run the ball too much, and that might be true.
I mean, in Summerfield, like an offensive line guy?
Yeah.
Like that's what offensive line guys.
Yeah, you're run the T.
Beat
you
him
know,
at the line.
Yeah,
and be tough.
Own the line
push
of scrimmage,
him around.
Right?
Yeah. Which, I mean, I guess he's not wrong that you need to control the line of scrimmage, but like this is a different.
This is a different animal, yeah. Work with your personnel, I guess, right?
You know who the previous blueprint of Memphis football was Rip Shearer and Tommy West.
Yes.
And that was run the ball.
Yeah.
And that only worked
painful.
For...
It's painful.
It's painful.
It is painful,
That
Tommy.
Only worked for a minute for Tommy when he had D'Angelo.
Yeah.
And then now I feel like the blueprint has been laid out for you. Like, other people did the hard work of how to win at Memphis.
Mm-hmm.
Just copy it. Copy paste.
Use the weapons you got and try to throw. You got to throw the ball. Probably got to play some tempo. Maybe.
Why are you trying to reinvent the blueprint of how to win at Memphis?
Well,
just do what they did.
The thing that I was frustrated with Memphis going when I saw them at Tulsa was we were better than Tulsa, and yet we were sloppy. You know, you got special teams can't get it together. We're fumbling the ball. We're trying to run the ball. Can't hang on to the ball. A lot of slant passes.
Yep.
Just not using our personnel to our best, and we were clearly better than that team. And so to see that game, I didn't think we were that great.
The special teams thing is wild. He misses kicks or they miss kicks. The inconsistency that, like, he could drill one that looks like it would be good from 60, or he might kick it into the butt of his center.
Yes.
Like,
hit or miss.
How do you miss – How is your consistency in just striking the ball that differently?
I have no idea.
I don't understand it, but it is a...
It's a strange thing to watch.
It's incredibly frustrating.
And next year, the thing about it is you do play Mississippi State at Mississippi State, so in theory, Mississippi State will be better next year.
You would think
you lose.
Is it Will Rogers still going to be around?
Will's going to be a junior.
That's a problem for Memphis, at least.
So you've got that plus a tough conference schedule. It looks like they're supposed to play North Texas next year. Like, these aren't – you're going to play Arkansas State again next year, and they're all going to get better.
Yeah.
So, like, you do need to improve.
Yeah.
And next year you probably do need to try to win 7 or 8 games.
Yes. At two years in a row of – if you go
– Did you see this again?
I certainly hope not. I wouldn't be okay with that.
Okay. All right. We'll go to our third one
here. The Grizzlies – are the 500 team that they were predicted to be at the beginning of the year.
Cap or no cap, I say that is no cap. I think that, I'm interested in what you think first, and then I think that they are who we thought they were.
They are! Right? And we let them off the hook.
Yeah,
They are who we thought they were. Yeah. I mean, they were predicted, they have overachieved the last couple years, it's always like been like kind of a calling card for them is like, you think we're going to a 31-win team? And then they overachieve, and
it makes
the fans excited about it. And so they've been hit with like, all right, we think you're a 500 team battling for that bottom end play-in spot. And you hope they have showed signs this year where you're like, oh, dude, we might be better than that. Yeah. And I think this is the mark of what is truly a 500 team, is that inconsistency of like one game they look amazing, and then the Tenderloins beat them by 43.
I think that's exactly
they
right.
They lose by 40. And so you're like, wait a minute, which is kind of wild, to be honest with you. How does any, obviously it happens every year, it happens multiple times a year, but how does any NBA team lose by over 40 points?
I do think there's something to, and Eric has talked about this, the background on these, like when they go to Los Angeles, for example.
Yeah.
You see the Grizzlies and they beat the Clippers.
Yeah.
And then they go back on the road and they get destroyed by Portland in the next game. And a lot of it has to do with maybe they're on the road, maybe they're partying in LA. I think some of that has to do with there's distractions on the road. But like tonight is a game I wouldn't expect them to win.
No.
It's a game they might win, though. That's how these things work. Like you said, it's like you just can't predict it. You beat the Clippers on the road. You beat the Clippers at home.
Right.
You know, those are two games I didn't.
Those are schedule losses.
Yeah.
You look at those and think you're going to lose those.
And then they win them, so you're like, oh, I'm back on the party train.
Yep.
I did see something interesting about Jaren Jackson this weekend that somebody put out there, and it was in the last 15 games or whatever. Jaren hasn't scored over 20 points but once.
Yep.
I think John Martin fairly brought up Jaren Jackson and that he has to do more consistently. And I think that's where you end up being this 500 team.
Sure.
Like, if you're going to be a $100 million player and get paid that kind of dough to be the second best player on the team, that player needs to perform on a consistent basis in order for you to be above 500, I think.
No, I think you're right. I mean, Jaren has been great in not an off-the-ball things. And he's been really good this year. And that, obviously, a lot of that doesn't show up in a stat line.
Right.
And so you just think he's been sucking. And he just has been inconsistent offensively.
Yep.
And for the Grizzlies, you need him to be consistent offensively. It's not enough for him to just be awesome at other things on the floor, which you appreciate that. And it's needed that he's awesome.
He's got to score. He's got to rebound. He's got to do all this stuff,
He does have to be more than just what he's been doing for them to be better. And that, you know, you got to hope that eventually, it's still early. I mean, what are we, game 9?
Yeah.
Game 8? I don't know, whatever we are.
Well, let's see, they're 8-8, so it's
16 games.
Yeah.
It's still pretty early, and I guess, to be honest with you, they are who we thought they were.
I think they are, too. They get the Jazz tonight. We're going to have the pregame at 7:30 with Jessica Benson.
Yep.
And then the Raptors, and then the Hawks. So you can see how this works.
Is Dylan back? Well, they have said injury report?
Yeah, I didn't see it today.
Wasn't he out on
Saturday?
He didn't play on Saturday. Neither did D'Anthony. So, I mean,
it'll help.
A lot of your defensive energy and just your energy in general of, like, your loose ball, like, do everything, always have your hands in the mix.
Yeah.
I mean, it does matter when those guys are missing.
I was just blown away by the score.
43 points is a lot of points, man. Getting beat by 20 feels like when you don't have, when you don't have your legs, you're tired, or you're just, like, you're missing shots, you're not into it. Getting beat by 20 seems like, okay, that makes sense. But getting beat by 43 is, like, that's next level.
Jaren played 26 minutes and had 12 points. Desmond Bane had 21. Tyus Jones had 16. I didn't get to see the game because we were watching the Luke Combs show, but I went out to the hall and I saw the score and I'm like, well, I guess I don't need to pay much attention to that.
We were having my wife's birthday party on Saturday, and
happy birthday.
I would have turned it on, but I get my ESPN quarter scoring updates on my phone.
It was early they were getting
it. It was
beat.
Early. And I was
you
like,
didn't
you
have
know
to
what?
Wait around.
I don't think I need to even bother. It was like 40. They had scored 40 points. I gave up 40 points in the first quarter. I was like, you know what? I think I'm good.
So you're in agreement with me that 500-ish kind of team is kind of what we're looking at.
I think so, yeah. I think that's they are who we thought they were.
Okay. We may be able to save our last two for later in the rundown. I'm going to use this to cap off our cap or no cap.
All right.
Lane Kiffin will be the next coach at Florida. Cap or no cap?
I think he has his pick.
Which job do
you want?
Who would have ever thought? You go to Ole Miss, you get to have whatever you want.
I think this is cap. I don't think he'll go to Florida. I think LSU is like that. He might. That's one to look at.
You don't see him going though, do you?
No,
that's
not
a survive.
No, really, not really. Because honestly, not that like Florida isn't a better job than Ole Miss, because it is. But like, he's clearly shown he can get it rolling at Ole Miss, at which point, and you go, oh, well, you always have Alabama to deal with. Well, if you go to Florida, you got Georgia to deal with. You're always going to have something hard. And so it feels like LSU is like the one to kind of take. But, I mean, do you think, who knows, what if somebody else takes LSU,
right,
who are they getting and what opens up because of that? And,
what would you do if you're Lane Kiffin?
You know what? Let me reverse this. Lane Kiffin will be the coach at Ole Miss next year.
Okay,
cap or no cap.
I would say that is he'll be the coach. I don't think that's cap. That's no cap. I think he's going to be the coach at Ole Miss.
You think he's going to stay?
Yeah, no cap. That dude's staying. And the reason why I would stay and I think he'll stay is, first of all, I think he'll be able to figure out who the quarterback is. I know it's not going to be Matt Corral because it looks like Matt Corral's going to the NFL.
Yep.
But he seems to be a pretty good evaluator of the quarterback position.
He does.
He's an offensive genius. And the defense has looked pretty good this year. He's got a good coordinator there. He's got a good thing going. This is the guy who jumped around and jumped around and jumped around for the bigger, better thing every single freaking time, whether it was 1 year and then he got out of Tennessee before they could keep him. You know, he's always been hopping. Everything, when I watch him, and I'm projecting a little bit here, is a guy who seemingly has it all there.
I mean, he...
And he doesn't have to do these crazy expectation things.
Sure.
As soon as you go to LSU and you take that $10 million check, it's like, man, it's the whole gig is different.
Well, it is, but you kind of create your own monster. I mean, like Cutcliffe, when he was a long time ago at Ole Miss, he was really good, and he kind of created his own monster that when he had a bad year, they got rid of him. And if you create your own,
this year...
You make Ole Miss people think we should be winning 10 games every year.
Yeah.
Then the year he goes 7-5, then now his seat's hot, and his seat is hot at Ole Miss. At which point, when is the next time all these jobs, these big-name jobs, are going to be open at the same time, to where you almost have your pick of where you can go to, and they're set, technically they're all set up better to win a national championship or even get to the playoff.
You make a good argument.
More than what he is at now. If you are, I feel like Lane Kiffin does not lack in self-confidence and being able to win everywhere he goes.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think he is somewhat self-aware and like, yes, I can win at Ole Miss, but can I like, I'm not going to win the whole dadgum thing at Ole Miss.
Here's the thing about
where I think
him.
He could do it at LSU.
Him versus Orgeron, I will say this. I like Lane Kiffin. I think Lane Kiffin could sustain a program for a longer period of time compared to Orgeron, despite the fact that Orge got him that 1 year.
Yep.
He had a quarterback.
Yep.
We know the whole story.
I agree with that.
I think so. That's why you might take LSU, because I'm a program developer. I can consistently keep that thing rolling.
Well, your recruiting base is built in, basically.
You already have players.
Yeah.
You don't have to pine for players against Mississippi State, in-state kids.
Yep.
So, yeah, that's why you take it. The reason why you may not take it is maybe you're in a different place in your life and you've decided, I'm going to try to win 10 games at Ole Miss every year. But you did hit on something that is a problem at Ole Miss and Mississippi State and Memphis, really. Memphis has this problem now, too. Like, after Memphis got rolling, this is why the Silverfield job was different. Because you had to really think strategically about hiring Ryan, because you weren't hiring like you did the first time with Fuente.
You're right.
You were hiring based on the fan expectations for an 8-plus win team.
That's right.
In the American.
That's right.
And clearly that is not where we're at right
now.
Yeah,
6-6 doesn't cut it here anymore.
So, like, and the program did that. Good for y'all. Like, you got the indoor practice facility. Yeah. It's awesome. Like, I love going to those games. I want to go, but it's just not as fun when they're not winning.
Listen, it's a pain in the neck to have these expectations.
It sucks.
I'm not saying that it's not hard, and but it's, like, the best problem to have.
That's a good
problem. That means you have success, and it's hard to maintain that, but, like, that's the kind of hard stuff you want. You don't want the hard stuff of, like, reviving a program from the dead after the Larry Porter era.
Yes.
You want your difficulty to be sustain success. And I feel like at Ole Miss, that's a hard thing to do.
It is hard once you've set the bar this high. Like, this could be a 10-win team if they beat Mississippi State.
I mean, even if it goes to Florida, even if Florida was an option, if it went to Florida, yes, you have Georgia as a hurdle.
Sure.
But
you're playing Tennessee.
You're kind of set up to be 10-2 better at Florida than you are to be set up at 10-2 every year at Ole Miss. Now, 10-2 might not be good enough at Florida, which at their port, you know.
But you can't be losing to Missouri is what you're saying.
That's correct.
You know, you get Mizzou, go win that game. You get, you know, you're going to get a couple cupcakes a year.
Can't be getting scared by Samford.
No, you got to knock that one out against the Bulldogs. Well, the other thing I was going to point out, and I've said this to Jason and John, the similarity between Ole Miss and Mississippi State, and this is why they made a coaching change when they let Moorhead go. They were a winning team who just won a bowl.
Yeah.
But the problem behind the scenes, there were some issues. But more than that, the excitement sucked. There was no excitement. Like,
no.
Their coach was this boring-ass offensive coordinator from Penn State.
Yep.
You weren't running the spread. I mean, there was nothing to it. It was a good team. But those teams in Mississippi, you're not going to always get to 10 wins. You just want to win 7 or 8 and have some fun.
It's a similar thing that Memphis has to deal with.
It's similar.
Just being a decent football team and winning 6 or 7 games is not enough. Like, you kind of have to have style points along with it.
Which is why Norvell and they played a little faster.
So that when you lose, you still just put up 35 or 40 points.
Right.
And it was a fun game. You're like, well, you know.
It's true.
Memphis or Mississippi State. Like, but it's still, you had a good time.
Yeah.
When it's miserable is when it's boring football to watch.
Yes.
You don't score points and you're still losing. At which point then you want to, like, this is the worst. So, you know, that's kind of the hurdle. And Lane Kiffin, to his credit, even when they lose, they still fun.
Oh, they're super fun.
Going for fourth downs.
Yeah.
Throwing the ball over the place. So, So he does have that going for him at Ole Miss, but I don't think.
Ole Miss fans are having a lot of fun this year.
As they should.
And for their sake, I hope he doesn't.
And
bounce.
I hope he stays because he is a blast.
And I'm not an Ole Miss fan. I think he's a blast.
Same here.
Yeah.
He's a blast.
Stay in Oxford, dude.
I hope for their sake he is still there because it's more fun when good football surrounds us as opposed to when it gets further and further away.
Yeah.
So, as this. Well, coming up next, we're going to have Jason Fitz from the Spain and Fitz Show. I'm going to ask him about some football and also what he thinks about the prospect of LeBron James as a boxer. You're listening to the Jason and John Show. I am J.R. Moore, filling in for the boys, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
With special guest host J.R. Moore from Ingram Hill.
Welcome back to the show. My name is J.R. Moore, filling in for the boys on 92.9 FM, ESPN. Joining us now is the co-host of Spain and Fitz, all things digital for ESPN networks and everywhere else. Jason Fitz, how are you, sir?
Man, I'm great. Happy Thanksgiving week, Memphis.
Yes.
You know, we're all already dreaming of turkey, but, you know, we got a little bit of fun before we get there.
100%. Okay, so we're going to make a cheap bet. I'm giving you $100. Who wins in a sanctioned boxing match, Isaiah Stewart or LeBron James?
Isaiah Stewart. I'll tell you, look, LeBron's got the size. LeBron doesn't have the mean streak.
Like, no.
You know,
no.
Like LeBron, if he landed a punch, then he'd turn around and be like, sorry, man, I didn't mean to do that. Like, but it is funny to see, and like, let me be the old man for a minute. Like, just the fact that this play has caused such an uproar, when it really was just part of the way basketball was played. Like, I'm never that guy that's like, oh, they used to. And suddenly I'm sitting here saying, okay, well, there's a fine line, guys. Like, we don't have to be so wild and out with this that we're like, oh, man, suspensions everywhere. This is the malice at the Palace part 2.
Right.
Like,
no.
If you're really saying this, then you need to go back and watch the documentary on Malice at the Palace because that was a much different thing.
That was way different. This is like a normal, super competitive, it's a physical game, and it just, it's getting a little roughed up here. Like, this is like a standard NBA fight, at least standard NBA fight in the 1980s and 90s. Now it's apparently, if you Yeah. Well, of course, it probably didn't help that he was going after the king, and so therefore we got to blow it up way bigger. And I'm with you. I think LeBron is huge and he's strong. But I don't ever consider LeBron tough. Am I alone there?
No.
No, I think you're right. You know, I 1,000% think you're right. And by the way, like anybody that's ever played, like even if you're just playing pickup league basketball, you know that there are certain guys that just have pointy elbows, right? Like it doesn't take a lot for that pointy elbow guy to suddenly like agitate. And I
Absolutely.
Feel like that's what we saw. Like we saw pointy elbow agitator. It just happens to be, you know, LeBron this time. And like that in and of itself, like if this was the same exact incident, but it was happening between a player we didn't care about on the Jazz and anybody we sort of care about on the Clippers, it wouldn't even be a story today.
That's exactly right. I mean, there is this always pointy elbow guy. I broke, literally as in playing adult league pickup basketball, I broke my thumb by the hard, the guy
just,
his body is harder than everybody else's. It doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm.
My thumb hit his arm and it broke.
JR,
and I was like,
I have
what
a confession. I am pointy elbow guy.
You're pointy elbow guy?
I have knives
for
elbows. Like, it was my only tactic in like pickup when I was a kid. That was the only thing I could do.
Remind me never to play pickup with
no,
you.
There
we go.
Knives,
I'm telling
yeah.
you, if you're thinking, I don't know who pointy elbow guy is,
it's you.
Then
you are that guy.
Pointy elbow guy. Like, everybody yeah. knows the one person that, like, and pointy elbow guy always takes so much pride in it, too, because midway through the game, you're like, I don't want to play against this guy anymore. And you're like, yeah, because I'm tough. And it's like, no, because you got pointy elbows, man. Like, my side. I just don't need that agitation.
Oh, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. All right. Jason, are people in Nashville, are they freaking out about the Titans getting beat up by the lowly Texans? Or is this are people just kind of like, this is a one-off stinker?
No, I think people are freaking out a little bit because Titans fans tend to freak out about sort of everything. But I yeah. don't think it's inexcusable. Like, I'm going to be honest. I mean, this year is the first time in NFL history we've seen 2 weeks where the underdogs finished the week with a winning record. Two different times this year, we've seen underdogs actually beat more often than the favorite, right? So I keep thinking about that, thinking about the concept of a trap game, and I believe in trap games.
Yeah, 100%.
How do they exist this year? Because you know, you just watched the Rams lose to the 49ers the other night. We've seen, you know, the Jets get wins that they shouldn't get, and we keep looking at it and saying, oh, it's just a trap game. Well, I mean, the message in the locker room should be pretty clear. Like, everybody's vulnerable every week. And at this point, the importance of it is that there's only one first-round bye in the playoffs. So if you think that you might have any shot of getting Henry back on the field, you've got to play well enough to have that top seed locked up. And that's, I mean, and then on the flip side of it, like, I know that the Colts aren't going to catch the Titans. There's
right.
too big of a lead. But the other side of it is the Colts are playing better right now than the Titans. So that can't be, like, it's not just about getting to the playoffs. It's also about trying to win games there if you're as good as the Titans are this year.
I mean, do you think that because of their roster issues for the Titans and just how many guys they're missing, is this like a – I mean, do you think that they may have something to worry – not just the attitude of taking other teams seriously. Do you think they have something to worry about even over the next several weeks of, like – because don't they have the Patriots coming up?
Yeah.
You know, the
this
Patriots
weekend,
are almost kind of as I hate it so much. But suddenly they're good again. They lose the best quarterback in NFL history, and yet they're still really good in leading the division. Should the Titan fans, like, worry about, like, wait a minute, this is there a pattern happening here? Like, do we have to worry about playing like this for the next few weeks until we can get our guys back?
Yeah, I think that's, you know, that's a big part of it, and you have to look at it and say, what's the identity of this football team? Because I do believe in identity, and no Derrick Henry, and now you've got Tannehill coming out and throwing four picks. Now, I don't think that's indicative of who Tannehill is. It was just a bad day.
I don't know about that. I'm a Dolphins fan.
No, you've seen some of that. Yeah. You've seen some of the worst of both the personal. But you know, the thing of it is, and this is what we talked about when Derrick Henry went down. I mean, we haven't seen offensive production since he went down that was worth anything. And you're talking about a team that has talent and skill positions, so they should be capable of winning games, and they don't look it. And right now, you've got to be concerned about this offense's ability to go out and just generate yardage, generate points. I think there's a real concern. And I hear the injury conversation, but we've seen that at an alarming clip. I mean, the fact is the Ravens came in with an identity this season that they were going to run the football. They've lost basically every person they've tried to run the football with, and they just went in and won a game with their backup quarterback. So, you know, I mean, through it all, I keep looking at injuries and saying, yeah, that's a part of the story, but everybody's dealing with it at an alarming clip this year. So it can't be the same level of excuse it's been in the past.
That's exactly right. Everybody's dealing with injuries, and when back in the most important position is seemingly quarterback, and when backup quarterbacks are coming in and still winning games, because you, yes, Derrick Henry is amazing, but when you lose your running back, you still have to be able to, like, generate offense and be good. Mm-hmm. You can't just, like, oh, well, he's out. We'll just suffer through this for a little while until we get him back. That's not a way to do it. I want to switch to college football here. Jason, how large of a limb do you think the college football playoff committee would give up in order to keep Cincinnati out of the playoff? Do you think, like, a finger or maybe a whole left arm they would give up?
I think, you know, probably an arm and a leg.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and the funny thing is, to be very honest, you know, what are we fighting for here? We're fighting for the opportunity for Cincinnati to make the playoffs and take on a Georgia team that is, I think, one of the best we've seen in recent years in college football. So, you know, I've got perspective on it. But the other side of it is, I do think the committee is rooting for Cincinnati to find a way to blow it simply so that they don't have to put them into the playoffs.
Yep.
You know, I mean, and that's why every week when people are like, why do I care so much if Cincinnati wins or loses? It's because I think the committee this year has been maddeningly inconsistent, and the only way that any of us can call them out on their BS is if we force them to make difficult decisions. And unfortunately, because we can hide behind the, well, college football is going to college football, then we don't have to hold the committee accountable to stupid decisions. Like the fact that Michigan State gets just absolutely destroyed by Ohio State makes it easy for the committee to justify the way they had them ranked, but it still doesn't make their logic before that game any good to me. So, you know, I want Cincinnati to win just so that the committee has to face the music of the decisions that they've made.
Listening to Jason Fitz here on the our guest here on the Jason John Show on 99 FM ESPN. Speaking of the committee and their inconsistencies, do you think they care that people are calling them out? Because I feel like when it comes down to it, let's just say everything holds as what you think it is. I mean, everything holds court. Georgia beats Alabama in the SEC championship, so it's a two-loss Alabama team. Do you think they just say, we don't care, they put in two-loss Alabama, and they have Notre Dame skip? And they just put in, you know what, Notre Dame's going to be better than Cincinnati for our TV, so we're just going to put Notre Dame in, even though they lost to Cincinnati. Do you think they just do it anyway and say, we don't really care? Or do you think they're just really hoping that Cincinnati loses?
I think a couple of things here. I genuinely believe this. Having talked to people in the committee, having done the mock committee, they don't care about TV rankings. The one thing I'll tell you is that they think that they're the 13 smartest people in the world when it comes to college football. That is, you know, so this is the hard part about different people that you ever debate with. There are certain guys, you know, at my network that, you know, you can get into a debate about what team's better at something, and they'll eventually just go to I played and watched the tape. And that guy, you can't argue with, because there's no – that person has just told you they're convinced they're right. I think a lot of the committee is that way. And I'm a coach, so I know more than everybody. And, you know, unfortunately, when you get into that situation, like when I did the mock committee a few years ago, I'll never forget Cole Kubelik, who is one of my great coworkers at ESPN. Cole's a great debater and has a really powerful voice when he speaks his mind. And I remember watching, we were having a conversation because you take an old year and you mock through it. And it was the Blake Bortles UCF year that we were mocking through, and UCF had been undefeated. And Cole just came in with so many metrics to that conversation about the average size of an offensive lineman in the SEC of an offensive lineman at UCF. And Cole was like, you can't tell me that these physical bodies could have held up against these physical bodies for this many games. And I watched Cole, because he was passionate and really believed in his argument, I watched him sway a bunch of people that came in saying, no, this is a really dynamic offense. And by the end of it, we had scored UCF lower than the BCS had that year. So it shows you the power of, and I say in air quotes, that guy, meaning that former lineman that wants to talk size and really intimidate everybody on stuff you don't know as much about. And I can't tell you if Cole's argument was right or wrong, because I never played on the offensive line, but when I'm looking at a former offensive lineman that's telling me that, it holds credence. So I think that's all part of the really difficult portion of the process behind the scenes for the actual 13 that are in the committee every year, is that it takes one really dominant voice that is convinced that size is the reason that teams from the AAC couldn't compete with teams in the SEC. And once that little nugget's been planted, I don't know how you get around it.
God, I think you're right. That's super interesting. Having the mock playoff thing, that argument. Like once it's in there, it's kind of hard. It's hard to argue against that. So I'm not sure. Maybe you haven't heard the news, Jason. But this guy named Dan Mullen got fired, and so
never heard of him.
Right. So he's at this little tiny school called the University of Florida, and that just opens up one more huge college football head coaching job.
Yeah.
Like who? I feel like, well, at least I always heard that, like, you know, ADs, when you're going to fire somebody, it's usually because you have the next guy basically lined up, or you should have your next guy, like, this is the dude I'm hiring. But there are so many big jobs open right now. Like, who is the hot name? Who's going to get this job that is not going to take LSU or not going to take USC that is going to make worth firing Dan Mullen?
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that. I mean, and if you're Luke Fickell that's always in these conversations, you leave him for Florida?
Yeah.
I mean, maybe, but, you know, I'll say this. And Mike Golic Jr. and I have argued this till we're blue in the face, and he believes that all coaches believe they can win anywhere. I believe that modern coaches have become really smart businessmen. And you got to ask yourself as a business person, do you want to go to a school where you can win the SEC East and 2 years later be out of a job because you're perceived as incapable? Do you want to go to a school in LSU where you can win the national championship and a year and a half later be gone? You know, at the end of the day, if you are a coach in the SEC, you are judged only by your ability to win the championship every single year. And if you're not doing it, like, I know that it's been a bad year for Florida, and I know that it's been a bad year for Dan Mullen, and Dan Mullen hasn't necessarily held his weight. But I'm also looking at it, to your point, saying, boy, you better know what you're getting, because you don't always know the next quarterback's going to be better. And by the way, this is all the more reason that I think Michigan State's decision to pay Mel Tucker is troubling. 10 years, $95 million.
Think about it.
In a 10-year period in NCAA football between 2010 and 2020, almost $600 million was paid out in buyouts to coaches. Where are we finding this miraculous buyout money? And I'm looking at Dan Mullen, and I'm looking at Orgeron, who's now going to be paid $16 million to not coach.
That's awesome.
And I'm asking everybody around here, I'm like, what are we doing? Like, how are we firing guys? Like, if you're going to guarantee the money out, and then you're going to tell me that we can't pay kids and that we can't find economic structure in college football and we can't find parity, but we can suddenly find – like, if Mel Tucker loses – and if Mel Tucker, I should say, never wins a Big Ten championship, how many years before they decide they're just going to pay him $50 million bucks to not coach?
Like, 4 years from now, it could totally be gone. This recruiting class is done, and 4 years from now, they're back to being a 4-8 team or whatever. Like, he's still got six more years in his deal. It's crazy. Jason, I got one more for you, and then I'm going to get you out of here. And this is simply for my own – the audience may not care about this, but yeah, I find your career path fascinating, as like yours and Steve Gorman. I love learning about it. But I'm curious, do you still play shows?
I don't really play a lot of shows. Like, I'll still sit in with friends. Like, I always use this example, but, like, Chris Young's a really close buddy of mine. And so, like, if Chris is playing a show somewhere nearby, like, I have the open invite to grab a fiddle and go sit in. Like, that sort of thing. And I still play the violin, the piano at my house, but I don't actually ever, like, I don't just get out and be like, I don't have time. At some point in life, I'd like to, just for the fun of it, because the thing I always tell people is, like, I'll always be a musician. I just love the fact that I'm not in the music business anymore.
Right.
So a much different thing.
That makes sense. I feel like I just didn't know a good fiddle player, I feel like, is hard to find and always in demand. And so with Christmas time, people don't always Christmas shows. I don't know if, like,
let me extend that question a little. I want to put you on the spot, and you don't have to answer this. You know, do people call you and be like, hey, you want to get on a radio and go on tour with us?
Not really. I'll say this. If I put the feelers out that I was looking, I think then more so. But most people, like, I always say this. I was at Blake Shelton a few weeks ago, and I went to see Blake and the guys. And one of the band guys was asking me, he's like, oh, you miss playing? You want to play? And, like, you ever? And it's like, no. So I think everybody in town knows that I don't miss playing. If I turned around and was like, hey, guys, I want to get back in the game, I think there'd
change.
Be opportunity. But, you know, I think for me it's much more – you know, I'm so much more happy just turning around saying, you know what, I'm good. I'm good watching Trans-Siberian Orchestra, not playing.
Fair enough. That was Jason Fitz. Thank you so much for joining us.
Jason appreciate
Fitz,
you,
he's co-host of Spain and Fitz.
Thanks, buddy.
Really appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Have a happy Thanksgiving.
And coming up next on the Jason and John Show, we're going to talk about Tiger football in the rundown, and they have a game against Tulane coming up to hopefully get them to 500. God bless us all. Please let them get to 500. You're listening to the Jason John Show. My name is J.R. Moore, filling in for the boys on 92.9 FM ESPN.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, 3-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.